America Radio Network News. I'm Monica DeSantis. Coalition officials say troops are nearing the completion of combat operations in Iraq, but the war is not over yet. The commander of land forces in Iraq says pockets of resistance remain, and unfortunately, the allies have not suffered their last casualty. A new report says four American soldiers accused of stealing nearly $1 million in cash found hidden in Baghdad actually plan to lift another $12 million. The New York Post reports Army investigators believe the soldiers hid away more money to be recovered by them later. A deal has been reached that could kickstart the stalled Middle East peace process. Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat and Premier designate Mahmoud Abbas reached an agreement on a reform Palestinian cabinet. A dispute over specifics had been holding up a new peace plan, and Arafat spokesman says they have sorted out their differences. A report today says the Bush administration underestimated Shiite strength in Iraq. Hundreds of thousands of Shiites took to the streets in southern Iraq over the last 2 days in a religious pilgrimage banned under Saddam Hussein's regime, but some Shiites shouted anti-American slogans. The Washington Post quotes unnamed administration officials as saying the U.S. had expected a warmer reception. Meanwhile, the man in charge of the country's reconstruction says there's already progress being made, especially in northern Iraq. Retired General Jay Garner.
I have a good feeling about sort of a glass half full guy, not a glass half empty guy. So I think security is getting better. I think public services are getting better. And I think in very short order, you'll see a change in the attitudes and the will of the people in the South.
He also says after talks with Kurdish leader Jalal Talabani, there is an agreement Iraq will be a democracy and represent all of its residents. On Wall Street this hour, the Dow was down 13 points, NASDAQ up 3, and S&P also up 3 points.
What's the big news in allergy medicine this season? It's a new name in non-drowsy relief, Allivert. New Allivert starts dissolving the instant it touches your tongue, without water. So you can take Allivert inside, outside, in your car, wherever you are. Allivert is non-drowsy 24-hour relief in a quick-dissolving tablet. New Allivert. Allergy medicine you can take right when you need it, wherever you are. Allivert. Use as directed.
I may be pregnant, but my period stays away. I want to
know. With First Response Early Result Pregnancy Test, used as directed, she could get results up to 4 days sooner than other leading brands. And now, results are even clearer with an easy-read result line. I want to know now. First Response. Results 4 days sooner.
See doctor as recommended. 52% get results 4 days sooner. 86% 2 days sooner. Used as directed.
The death toll in Canada from severe acute respiratory syndrome, or SARS, now stands at 15, with reports that a 64-year-old man is the latest victim of the illness there. As a result, the World Health Organization has warned against travel to Toronto, Beijing, and China's Shanxi province in an effort to halt the global spread of the virus. Three experts from the Centers for Disease Control in the U.S. traveled to Toronto earlier in the week to aid in efforts to prevent further infections of SARS there, particularly among healthcare workers.
Daddy, read me a story.
Sure thing, kiddo. Just let me turn on this light. Huh, the TV. That's weird.
Vacuum.
Daddy, I'm scared.
Don't be scared, Pumpkin. Just a little rewiring mix-up is all.
Jumping chimneys.
Get down.
Need a little rewiring help? Then come into Ace. We've seen it all and we know how to fix it. It's why people have been counting on us for products and advice for more than 75 years. Ace, the helpful place.
American Airlines may not be out of the financial woods yet. The Allied Pilots Association Board is deciding whether the union's president should approve a ratification vote accepting concessions. The airline said it needed all three of its major unions to approve such a package to avoid bankruptcy. But union members were angry after learning about an executive compensation plan even in the face of possible financial disaster. Missouri Congressman and presidential hopeful Dick Hephardt has unveiled what he calls a major new health care reform initiative. The plan is focused on providing universal health insurance. Gephardt, who's running for the 2004 Democratic nomination, called universal health care coverage the holy grail of public policy. And two runners from New York who ran the Boston Marathon started the race single, but crossed the finish line a married couple. The Schenectady Gazette reports they ran 19 miles before stopping at the steps of Newton City Hall in Massachusetts to tie the knot. I'm Monica DeSantis, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
I'm Bobby Ligas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Ah, running whitewater rapids. What a thrilling spring sport. In a raft. But in a car, it's a ride that may literally take your breath away. When I come back, I'll bail you out.
Doug is frugal.
Well, money doesn't grow on trees, you know.
The problem is, Doug is about to buy a used car.
Yep, and I'm going to get ripped off!
And Doug doesn't know about Carfax, which lets you check a used car's history to see if it's been in an accident, has accurate mileage, stuff like that. So you know your money's well spent.
So I might save thousands?
Exactly, Doug. Just go to CARFAX.com or ask your dealer for a Carfax vehicle history report.
Hey, how about we go halfsies on the car?
How about nunsies?
How about sumsies?
No. Carfax, the truth about used cars.
No one intentionally confuses cars for recreational rafts. But if you find yourself in a stream of late-melting snows or heavy spring rains, remember the kid's toy, a pogo stick. P-O-G-O. P, pop seat belts, after you go in water because they protect you on impact. O, open the window quickly, especially if you have power windows. G-O, get out. No explanation necessary. So make sure your whitewater adventure is with a guide and a paddle. Heed warnings of washed out roads. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Written about in the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, and Pravda. He spent time with the Pope and the Dalai Lama. And now you can talk with Tom Hartman simply by calling 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom Hartman.
Hey, good afternoon. It's the Tom Hartman Show on the IE America Radio Network. We're broadcasting from the Arctic Circle to the equator, from the depths of space on the Sirius satellite, from coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations, and streaming live around the world on the Internet. Day before yesterday, we had I got a message from somebody in London who was listening to the show. It's remarkable. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. Today, our question we're going to be looking at in this hour. We've got a great 2 hours set up here for you. First of all, our first hour here, we're going to have as a guest a little later on, Armin Lehman, who was the last courier, personal courier, carrying messages to Adolf Hitler just before Hitler committed suicide. And Armin, lived and saw the rise of Nazi Germany and has some thoughts for those of us in the United States these days. And that's going to be the core of our first hour. We're going to ask the question, is America in danger of losing democracy the way other nations have in the past? And in our second hour, we're going to be interviewing one of the world's leading authorities on the SARS virus, a futurist who has some interesting thoughts on this. We'll be calling in from London. And we're going to be talking about how democracy deals with public health crises. And is this a new opportunity for demagoguery, or is it something that really needs to be done, or both? Or, you know, how can we handle this in an appropriate way? And so I think we've got a couple of interesting hours for you here. Let's just dig right into this first one. Is America in danger of losing democracy the way other nations have? And it's not just Germany that lost democracy back in the 30s. This has happened all over the world. In fact, I think 84 was the number out of the nearly 200 nations in the world. I believe that 84 is the number that are considered democratic right now. And that was a steady incline from basically the founding of the United States, and then France followed, and then, you know, on it went, up until about 15 or 20 years ago, basically during the first Reagan-Bush administration, we began to see the actual decline of democracies around the world, where democracies turned into kleptocracies, plutocracies, or outright dictatorships. And this is a trend that concerns many folks, first of all. And also, many people are wondering, you know, is this a trend that might come home to haunt us? Back last year, in October of 2002, this was before the elections. This was about 3 weeks before the elections, actually. I was in Argentina. I was in Buenos Aires, Argentina. And I wrote an op-ed piece for Common Dreams, commondreams.org, about that trip, and had some observations that I thought, I think are germane to this. I'd just like to quickly share with you what a couple of the people said to me down there that I wrote down and made a copy of. You know, I noted that I just returned from Argentina and that I thought that people there really understood Machiavelli, you know, the author of The Prince. Machiavelli was the guy who you don't want to say invented, let's say wrote down and codified the concept of manipulative politics. And he wrote, "Everyone sees what you appear to be." And this was his instructions to the prince. He was the advisor. You know, he wanted to be the advisor to the prince. And he says, "Everyone sees what you appear to be. Few really know what you are. And those few who know what you really are dare not oppose you." And this is a prescription for anti-democratic rule. So, I noted that I was sitting in Buenos Aires next to a guy in the airport. I was on my way home. And again, this was 3 weeks before the United States elections of 2002. And this guy says to me, he says, "You know, this Saddam thing has little to do with trying to throw the 2002 elections like all you Americans think." Well, in fact, it did throw the 2002 elections because they kept the talk of, I mean, you may not remember, it's been so long ago, just a few months ago, you know, 6 months ago, something like that. But not quite. But the Bush administration was really banging the drum against Saddam Hussein all through September, October, and November, right up to the elections. And this enabled things like, what's his name, Max Cleland, the United States Senator from Georgia, who lost three limbs in Vietnam, being attacked. He was a Democrat, being attacked by the Republicans. His Republican competitor was a guy who had dodged out on serving during the Vietnam War. And this guy ran attack ads against Cleland, claiming that he wasn't patriotic enough. I mean, this is a guy who lost three limbs in Vietnam. How dare they say such things? Anyhow, we have this guy in Buenos Aires. He says, this is, you know, they're going to help the 2000 elections. But he says, of course, the 2000 elections is a nice side benefit, keeping everything else out of the news. I'm quoting him. He says, "But quote, but it's really about 2004 and setting up the Republicans for a half century of one-party rule like Roosevelt did. Bush will pull back from his war rhetoric after the elections and let in the UN inspectors." Now, keep in mind, in November, the inspectors still hadn't gone in. This guy says that he will, and this was published on October 25th, 2002, will pull back on his anti-war rhetoric and let in the UN inspectors, and all the world, even his opponents, will hail him as a man of peace. And then there will be problems with the inspectors. They'll find some excuse, and the war will start. He smiled and wagged a finger at me. "We know about one-party rule here in Argentina. You in America, you'll soon learn." And 2 days earlier, I'd been in a middle-class home in Buenos Aires and sat with a neighbor of the family that I was visiting, that I was staying with. I was staying with some friends down there. And a neighbor theirs came over, and you know, this very nice middle-class lady, you know, a middle-aged lady, and a middle-class lady, she looked like your typical 50-something, 40, late 40-something, early 50-something housewife. And she had spent 6 months in the prisons in Argentina being tortured, raped, and electroshocked. And she was describing it to me, and she would burst into tears as she was talking about it. And this was years ago that this happened to her. She was one of the disappeared, but she was also one of the lucky ones who made it out. She said, and I quote, "The war covered up the dark side of the government and the corruption of the politicians of the time." She said, "It was a good way of putting the attention of the people somewhere else. Like when you're a little child and you want to distract him. When you have a little child and you want to distract him and you say, 'Come here and have some sweets.' And we bought that immediately." She was talking about the Falklands War. This was when she was arrested. It was during the Falklands War. She was an anti-war protester, the Malvinas, the Falklands, you know, between Argentina and Great Britain. And she says, "And we bought that immediately, that war. There was dancing in the streets. 'We're going to win a war. Oh, boy, oh, boy.' We went with flags to the streets singing the national songs to celebrate the possibility of winning this war." Which brings us to James Madison. Back in April 20th, 1795, James Madison, who had just then finished shepherding through the Constitution and Bill of Rights and would become President of the United States within the next 10 years, wrote, and this is such, you know, it's so important, I think, for us to reach back to what our founders said, to find the, what's the essential core of the United States? What is the vision that we hold? And, you know, they're not even teaching this stuff in school anymore to a large extent. Anyhow, James Madison, 1795, he said, "Of all the enemies to public liberty, war is perhaps the most to be dreaded because it comprises and develops the germ of every other enemy of public liberty. War is the parent of armies, and from these proceed debts. And armies and debts are the known instruments for bringing the many under the domination of the few." In war, too, Madison continued, "in war, too, the discretionary power of the president is extended. Its influence in dealing out offices, honors, and emoluments is multiplied. And all the means of seducing the minds are added to those of seducing the force of the people. The same malignant aspect in republicanism may be traced in the equality of fortunes and the opportunities of fraud growing out of a state of war, and in the degeneracy of manners and morals engendered by war. No nation," Madison concluded, "could preserve its freedom in the midst of continual warfare." Our founders had figured that out. It's very, very clear. So the question before us here on the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network is America in danger of losing democracy the way other nations have? Eisenhower had some thoughts on this, and I want to share them with you here at about 17 minutes after the hour. He said, "In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential," this is a famous quote, everybody's heard this, "the potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power still exists and will persist." What most people don't remember is the sentence that followed that. He said, "We must never let the weight of this combination of the military and industry endanger our liberties or democratic processes. We should take nothing for granted. Only an alert and knowledgeable citizenry can compel the proper meshing of the huge industrial and military machinery of defense with our peaceful methods and goals so that security and liberty may prosper together." And it just goes on. It's so anyhow, we have this very interesting situation where the debate is being formed. You know, what kind of nation are we? And are we, are the egalitarian ideals of democracy being fulfilled in America, or are they being destroyed in America? Here's in today's the New York Times. Yeah, today's New York Times, an article about Argentina and Peronism. You know, Juan Perón had started this thing. "The origins of Peronism can be traced to social Christian doctrine, most notably the emphasis on social justice, equality, and harmony, implicit in the movement's official name, which was called Justicialismo. First articulated in the 1940s, Peronism sought to steer a middle course between capitalism and communism, taking what Perón liked to call a third position." It was sort of a modified democratic socialism, as you find in many of the European countries right now, particularly Holland. Well, you know, we took care of him. And now here we have this situation with France. You know, are we behaving like a bully again? Senior aides to U.S. President George W. Bush. This is from the AFP News, which was founded in France back in the 1830s. This is one of France's most prestigious news sources. Senior aides to U.S. President George W. Bush met this week to consider new ways to punish France for its opposition to the war on Iraq, including sidelining Paris at NATO and limiting its participation in transatlantic forums. Participants in the meeting held Monday at the White House after a similar gathering last week was postponed did not arrive at any decisions but are expected to gather again. The officials, speaking on condition of anonymity, said Vice President Dick Cheney has been particularly vocal in pressing for some sort of punitive measures to be taken against France. Well, how did France respond to this? This was in yesterday's French news. So today, in the Wall Street Journal, we read the response of France. France seeks end to Iraq's sanctions. The first paragraph.
My favorite.
Okay. We'll come back in just a moment with this information. This is the Tom Hartman radio program on the IE America radio network.
Let's read this one.
My favorite.
You want me to read your bedtime story? You have a bad headache.
Yeah, but I can't let it ruin our story time.
The moment of choice. Which will work better on your headache? Tylenol or Advil? Truth is, you'll feel better faster with Advil Liquid Gels. These advanced liquid-filled capsules rush relief where you need it. They're proven to work faster, stronger, better than Tylenol on tough pain.
The
end.
Good night, big girl.
Good night, big guy.
For better headache relief, advance to Advil.
You're strapped in to 700 horses of pure power.
Gentlemen, start your engine.
But you're twitching from the itching, squirming from the burning, and you've got 500 laps to go.
I should have used Preparation H.
Cool it fast with Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact for fast relief.
Lap number 25.
Oh, man, I should have used Preparation H.
Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact. Uses directed.
Are you wondering how to prosper in our so-called muddle-through economy? Experts say that gold is now the buy of a generation. Hi, I'm Christopher Kent, host of Antique Talk, and I'd like to introduce you to Swiss America, the company that's helping America to rediscover gold. Now, I'm no expert on the economy or on gold, but I am an expert on antiques and collectibles. And Swiss America is the leader in the United States collectible coin market, which has a very impressive track record over the past 30 years. But before you launch out into rare coins, the first step is to get educated. So please, write this number down. 1-800-289-2646.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune in to tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 47.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday.
Sunday. Yeah!
Animal Celebrity Boxing.
We're going to kick some butt!
Lightweight bout featuring Fearless Felix the Cat.
What a cat!
And that dog on ice, Tonya Harding.
Tonya Harding, she'll fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Boy, come on!
Greetings, everybody. This is Ramsey Pollard, Jr., the host of IE America's Sunday afternoon travel show, Ramblin' with Ramsey, on air 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Almost every Sunday, I travel to some location to offer you the opportunity of not only receiving wonderful printed material about the location, but to win a prize, maybe a couple of nights in a hotel or a resort or T-shirts or fudge. Oh, yes, there's always a lot of fudge. Come on, tune us in on your radio or go to IEAmericaRadio.com. I'll be there.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. When the tortured and scared.
Welcome back. to the Tom Hartman radio program on the IE America radio network and on Sirius Channel 145, Sirius Left, from beaming from the depths of outer space all across North America, Canada, the United States, Alaska, Florida, down into Central America, and streaming across the Internet on the IEAmericaRadio.com website. We're talking about, is America in danger of losing democracy the way other nations have? And we've kind of gone through Argentina. Now we have this situation where France today just backed down. I mean, yesterday the White House held this bully session where Cheney was making all these threats. And then they leaked this to the French press. It ran in the French press. And so today says, oh, no, we're all in favor of lifting the sanctions in Iraq. You guys can start selling oil. And, of course, you know, the oil costs a buck and a half a barrel to pump out of the ground. We might give the Iraqi government a dollar or two of that, and then our American companies get to pump the rest of it out and make it sell it at a great profit. And interesting goings on there. But apparently the French have caved in. The bully effort is working. Anyhow, we have a caller in Anniston, and we're going to a guest in just a few minutes, Armin Lehman, who was Hitler's last courier. So let's just very quickly bring in our caller. I didn't catch your name. Maybe we've lost our caller.
Hello?
Hello?
Lillian.
Oh, Lillian. Hi. How are you?
How are you doing?
I am great, but I'll get better. How about you?
I'm doing great. I just have a little uneasy feeling in my stomach about what you're talking about. I'm writing about it. Your station is my school.
Ah,
everything that I write about is what, you know, feedback. I give back what I receive.
Oh, that's great.
So this is how I feel about, okay, the evil, insane, fascist, Nazi government, corporations, millionaires. And see, when I say evil, insane, they all apply to each one, the fascist government, the corporations, and the millionaires, and most media, except WNSI.
Yeah.
810 AM radio station. See, the millionaires.
Thank goodness for WNSI.
Yeah, WNSI. 1% and 2% of the population must be more exceptions who are doing their best to steal, destroy, self-destruct, and kill. The book 1984 by George Orwell is being played out big time.
Yeah. Lillian, I absolutely agree with you, and I thank you so much for your call. I really appreciate you calling in.
Yeah, what I want to see, we need a think tank, a plan to act effectively. Destroy the wickedness inside and out. Work for the people, the poor, the middle.
I absolutely agree, Lillian. I think we've lost you there, but I'm spot on with you. And with further thought,
our government needs to come clean, be for the people, not for the very rich corporations. On election day, we need an honest vote count.
Yeah, I agree. And we need clean machines. And Lillian, if I may interrupt you there, I'm sorry, we have to go to our guest who's calling in from Oregon, Armin Lehman, and I think you're going to find him very, very interesting. So Lillian, I thank you so much for calling in, and please call in again, and we'll continue this conversation. But Armin Lehman is the author of a book called Hitler's Last Courier. It depicts life in Nazi Germany as he experienced it from 1933 to 1945 when he was in the Volkssturm, the People's Storm, the German Homeland Defense. It was the German Office of Homeland Security. And Armin, are you on the phone here with us?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. It's great to have you on the show. Armin, for those of you who are listening, Armin and I have known each other for more than 20 years, I think. We used to work together in Europe training folks for KLM and various all sorts of strange things. You have this wealth of knowledge, Armin, just an extraordinary wealth of knowledge. And I want to explore that in depth when we come back. After this commercial break, we're going to do a short newscast here. We'll come right back with Armin Lehman, the author of Hitler's Last Courier, here on the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network.
There are over 70 million Americans who suffer from arthritis, but for arthritis pain relief, there's only one Aleve, the medicine more and more doctors are recommending for all-day relief of pain. Doctors know Aleve can stop tough pain all day with fewer pills than Tylenol. And Aleve works right at the site of arthritis to provide fast, effective relief. Get relief doctors recommend. Aleve, arthritis pain relief that's all day strong, all day long. Use as directed for minor arthritis pain. Comparisons based on minimum 24-hour label dosing.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Hamilton.
And I'm Laura Miller.
Members of the union representing workers with Verizon Telecommunications are in Fort Wayne, Indiana today as the telecom giant holds its annual shareholders meeting. The Communications Workers of America will introduce a resolution that would limit pay for Verizon executives to no more than 50 times the compensation for a senior union worker. As wide as a 50-to-1 pay gap would be, says CWA Local 1108 President George Welker of Long Island, it's nothing compared to what top officers raked in 2001.
Steinberg in 2001 made $13.4 million. Charles Lee, who's retired just recently, he was the co-CEO, made $14.5 million. And that does not include their stock options.
Welker says those totaled about $30 million for each of the two executives. Though we'd like to see the resolution passed, Welker says there's no chance of that.
We just want it out there so people are aware of it, and we'll keep bringing it up every single year.
Since December, more than 2,300 Verizon workers in the state of New York have gotten pink slips.
The Supreme Court this week agreed to hear a case involving reverse age discrimination. The case involves the Age Discrimination in Employment Act, which prohibits discrimination against workers over the age of 40, and the General Dynamics Corporation. General Dynamics changed its retirement benefit eligibility from an original requirement that involved working at least 30 years for the company to new rules that make only those over 50 eligible for benefits. About 200 employees in their 40s sued the company after finding out they no longer qualified for retirement. The Supreme Court will explore whether the ADEA, in some circumstances, gives older workers an unfair advantage over younger ones. Arguments in the case are scheduled for this fall.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
The Peter Werby Show is now airing at a new time. Hi, it's Julene Jordan. The IE America Radio Network has added many exciting new shows to the lineup, and in doing so, the Peter Werby Show has a new time slot. It's weekdays, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we share with you progressive views about peace and social justice that you won't find in the corporate and conservative media. Join us 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern on the IE America Radio Network. For more information, go to www.ieamericaradio.com.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time every Sunday. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com. And join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, right here on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting live across the world on the internet, from the Sirius satellite, from deep in outer space, and on terrestrial radio stations from the Rocky Mountains to the East Coast. I'm holding in my hand an amazing book. You can find this on Amazon.com and your local bookstore, I'm sure, can order it. It's called Hitler's Last Courier by Armand D. Lehmann, L-E-H-M-A-N-N. And I just have to read you this little intro from the top, and then because we have Armand on the line, and I have some questions. It says, victory of the Allies was no longer in doubt. Russian forces had reached Berlin. Yet Hitler ordered his troops to keep on fighting. Among the last who defended his headquarters, an underground bunker in the Reich Chancellery Garden, were boy soldiers, 13 to 17 years old, members of the Hitler Youth Volkssturm, the Home Defense Force. The dictator had reached the point where he wanted the earth scorched. Facing total defeat, he was now willing to sacrifice everything and everybody, including the German people, even the youngest. Armand Lehmann, our guest now here on the show, was a witness to what happened in the Führer bunker. He was the runner who carried some of the last orders issued by Adolf Hitler right up to his suicide. Armin, welcome to the program.
I'm glad to be with you.
Armin, I'm curious, how is it in your mind that Germany was able to or willing to, that the German people were willing to turn a democracy, I mean, let's keep in mind, Germany was a democracy prior to the rise of Hitler, over to this madman warlord? How did that happen? How did the Nazification of Germany happen?
Yeah, I was born in 1928, and Hitler came to power in 1933. So I was 4 years old and not able to observe what was going on. But I know from my parents and my grandmother, for example, they had nothing to eat. And my grandmother would often say, you know, I don't have silverware anymore. It went to the farmers.
This was in the early days. This was in the early days before Hitler took power.
Yeah, but...
So this is the Great Depression.
These conditions more or less made Germany ripe for a dictator.
So economic depression and joblessness, things like that, these are the breeding ground for dictatorship, you suggest?
In Germany, that apparently was the case. Of course, my first memory of anything typical Nazi was a parade, a torchlight parade at night when my grandfather took me, and I was so impressed by these marching brown shirts and with the flaming torches that for me as a boy, I was seven at that time, was a memorable event.
Mm. Have you seen the new 55-cent stamp that the post office just released, Armin?
Not yet.
The United States Post Office has just released a new 55-cent stamp that has an eagle looking to the right. It is so spooky. It looks just like or very similar to the Nazi eagle that held the one that held the swastika. This one's holding a bar and it says USA underneath it. It's spooky. Anyhow, that was a digression. I'm sorry. I just saw that yesterday, and it just really took me aback. So Hitler's main rise to power occurred in 1933. You were still very young and probably know about this from the history books more than your own experience, because you were 7 or 8 years old then. But it was brought about by a terrorist incident, was it not?
Hitler actually was elected... And then the Reichstag, which was the German parliament, was burned down and they never established. I mean, there was a suspicion that a Dutch communist did it. And Hitler grabbed this opportunity to pass an emergency law that gave them all the powers.
And those were the powers to suspend habeas corpus, to arrest people as enemy combatants, to wiretap people's telephones, to read their mail. And he put a 4-year sunset provision on these laws to get them through Parliament on what were called the Enabling Acts.
That's right.
Yeah. And the parallels between the Enabling Acts and the USA Patriot Act are the subject of endless commentaries that you'll find in many, many venues, easily found on the Internet and whatnot. So how did Hitler come across as a leader? I mean, here you were in this country and you saw this man you were, what, 16 when he died, as I recall?
Yeah, I was 16. I have two distinct memories. I saw him the first time in Century Hall in Breslau, which is Wroclaw now, addressing a big, big crowd. And there was so much electricity. I mean, it was like a basketball game when the home team wins.
Yeah.
And he came across as a strong male. And, of course, he had these oratory abilities. Now, that was in 1938. Only 7 years later, in the bunker, he looked like an old, senile, broken man. And he was shaking so badly that I think there is some suspicion that his whole nervous system was affected. But dictators live on.
Yeah. And, go ahead.
I mean, under our system, there would have been ways to get him out of power in Berlin. Everybody left him, but the power stayed with him.
Right.
And then the last orders, of which some carried to the secret radio room, he even bypassed the military.
So you were carrying, in the last days of Adolf Hitler's life, you were personally hand-carrying messages from his hand to the radio room and to other places. Weren't there battles going on in Berlin then? I mean, weren't the Russians just about to enter the city?
Let me just correct. It was okay. Not from his hand. It was from his ordnance officer.
Yeah.
So there was the Situation Room.
Right.
And the
but
reason
you saw
I
him.
Got involved is that Hitler didn't trust anybody anymore, including the SS, which were Leibstandarte, his personal guard. So the party had across the street a secret radio room, and the Marines had a station there as well. So Dönitz, who became the successor of Hitler, he had a radio station there, and through this station, the last dispatches were received and sent out.
Mm-hmm. And you were the courier who carried those?
One of the couriers. In fact, I was only assigned to this after the Marines had lost all their couriers. They either were dead or badly wounded, so they ran out of runners. And the Hitler Youth runners were the only ones left.
Do you think that you mentioned that when you saw Hitler, he was shaking and he looked like an old man and that his nervous system was exhausted? I've heard stories that he was abusing drugs at that time, that he was taking amphetamines and methadone. Did you see any evidence of that? It's kind of a digression, but I'm curious.
His personal doctor, Professor Morell, had left the bunker with all the people who wanted to go on living, and he was replaced by an SS doctor, Stumpfecker, and Stumpfecker and Bormann, I think, perished together during the breakout. I mean, it is known, and the staff knew it, that Hitler had to have his pills three times a day. What they consisted of, obviously, there must have been some narcotics included.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm curious if you see any if you have any cautionary notes for us, or if you see any parallels between the rise of Nazism and Hitler in Germany in the 1930s, and this rush to the USA Patriot Act, and this rush to restrain civil liberties, and now Patriot 2, which will actually revoke the citizenship of Americans who are determined to be enemy combatants, and in Patriot 1, of course, you're determined to be an enemy combatant if you engage in behavior that threatens the life of others. So if you go, if you speed on the highway, you could be considered an enemy combatant under Patriot 1. I mean, in the broadest stretch, but it's not inconceivable. Do you see parallels between what's going on in the United States now over the last 3 years and what happened in Germany in the 30s?
Well, there are warning signals. I mean, our world is full of people with dictator personalities. But in a democracy, you can prevent such a person to reach the top.
And how do we do that?
By challenging authority. It costs money in this country, of course.
Yeah, but what happens when the authority controls the majority of the media, and anybody who does challenge that authority, like Tim Robbins, he was on TV on, I think it was the Today Show the other day, or one of the morning shows, and he was in the middle of a talk with the host, and they just blacked out the lights and went to a commercial, and, clearly over the objection of the host. People are being censored. There's these, these campaigns to not watch movies with Susan Sarandon or Sarandon, however you say it. How do we challenge that kind of power?
I speak a lot to students, and one of my messages is always question authority, and then I encourage, you know, we have to work with numbers. I mean, if there's an approval rating of 52, we got to get it down to 48 or to 40, and this can only happen through communication and spreading the word.
Yes. Armin Lehman is the author of Hitler's Last Courier, an extraordinary book you can find on Amazon.com and in your local bookstore. Armin, what do you think convinces young people to really go over the edge, to become suicide bombers, or to just, you know, so completely abandon logic and reason that they are willing to engage in violence for a political cause?
Yeah, in part, it is fanaticism, and combined with religion can be very, very dangerous. I mean, I was in my life probably for a 2 or 3 year period in a state where I would have sacrificed my life for Hitler because I was told. And if I was a Muslim and told, I could end up in paradise and do a great deed for my nation or my religion. There are times in life where a boy or even a girl would take that to heart and, depending on the nature, go forward all the way or in the last minute stop himself or herself and come to their senses. I get a lot of calls here of neo-Nazis, and, you know, I always question, what is the idea behind it? Haven't you learned? Nazism has passed, but we know the results of it. And if they don't see it, I actually tell them to see a psychiatrist.
Yeah. Yeah. I was in Germany 3 weeks ago, and I had dinner with an old friend of mine who was also a member of the Hitler Youth. He is now in his late 70s, as I recall. And he said to me, we were talking about this issue, and he's very concerned about what he sees going on in the United States. And he said, you have to realize Hitler had proposed a new Christianity. He was using religion and a kind of a fundamentalist variation of Christianity to sweep the people of Germany, to just draw them into this cult. And he described the Nazi organization as a cult. Very briefly, because we're coming up on the end of this segment here, was your experience being in the Hitler Youth, Armin Lehman, this similar to my friend Horst's experience?
I mean, I was very much impressed by all the symbols, and the Nazis used symbols for almost everything. So the symbolism, but it was always connected with the leader, and the leader was divine. I mean, we were told that he couldn't do wrong.
He was inspired by God, right?
He was inspired by God.
And he believed he was doing the will of God. He was explicit. Hitler was explicit about that, as I recall.
Yeah, and apparently he did believe it. I mean, that's where the sickness started.
Yeah, and that's a great, great danger, I think. Right across the board, it's a scary thing. Well, Armin Lehman, author of Hitler's Last Courier. Lehman is L-E-H-M-A-N-N, A-R-M-I-N, Armin Lehman. It's a pleasure to have you on the program today, here on the Tom Hartman Radio Program and on the IE America Radio Network. And thank you so much for calling in and for letting us have you on as a guest, Armin. And I hope we can talk again soon.
Good talking to you, Tom.
Thanks, sir. Thanks, you too. So, what do we have going on in the United States? We see this bully mentality that arose in Nazi Germany. We were talking at the beginning of the hour about how the same thing happened in Argentina on a different scale somewhat, and it rose its ugly head again during the Malvinas or Falkland War, and how I was down in Argentina just about 6 months ago interviewing people about this and for a book that I'm working on. And I was just startled by the parallels. And the one thing that seems so consistent is this idea of being belligerent. You know, the dictionary definition of fascism is belligerent nationalism combined with a merging of corporate and state interests. And now we see in the belligerent, speaking of belligerent, in today's USA Today, former House Speaker Newt Gingrich unleashed a broadside Tuesday against the State Department. We've got this guy attacking our State Department for alleged diplomatic failures, intensifying the ideological trench war that has long characterized the Bush administration. Gingrich accused the State Department of being responsible for the global unpopularity of U.S. policies. So we run around the world and do what we do, and the world doesn't like it. And Gingrich says it's Colin Powell's fault. Don't blame anybody else. Don't blame Bush or Cheney or any of these other folks. Just, you know, it's all Colin Powell. We'll be back after this break. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network.
I have a headache. I will take Tylenol now.
It's easy to forget sometimes. You don't have to do things the same way over and over. You have a choice.
I always take Tylenol.
But you could take Advil. Advil liquid gels are proven to work faster, stronger, better than Tylenol on tough pain.
I need data.
Clinical tests prove it. Advil liquid gels, advanced liquid-filled capsules, rush relief where you need it.
So I have a choice. I can choose Advil.
When was the last time you rethought your pain medicine? For better headache relief, advance to Advil.
It's all in the mix.
Yo, this is Ed Lover.
This is Dr. Dre.
That's right, we in the mix for Twix, baby. Here's the mix.
Ed, I'm gonna tell you right now, all from state to state, it's all about the mix.
You understand? That's how it's going down. Ed Lover and Dr. Dre style.
It's all in the mix.
Through the streets is doing my thing. I need the tricks to keep me in the mix, in the swing. When I want to stay real good in the mix,
come on, y'all.
Hi, this is Peter Werby from the IE America Radio Network, wondering whether you've heard about In These Times magazine. A bi-weekly magazine of news, politics, and culture has won more Project Censored awards than any other magazine. For 27 years, In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of the labor movement, feminism, grassroots politics, and minority communities. Find out what you're missing. Visit them online at www.inthesetimes.com or call them toll-free at 1-800-827-0270.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
What do you think I like about communing with nature as much as I do? Being on the tractor as much time as I do, or spending time with the animals.
Spitting diesel into the ozone layer?
Yeah,
you're at one with nature.
You have meddled with the primal forces of nature, and you will atone.
On the IE America Radio Network.
You know, Jamie, if people don't listen to animal talk, things with their animals won't go well.
Oh, they won't.
No, absolutely not. You see, because a dog will poop in the corner, and then a cat will end up peeing on a pillow. Then you'll have somebody who has an iguana that turns a little red. We don't want red iguanas. We don't want poopy in the corner. We don't want cat pee. If you don't listen to Animal Talk, you'll have crap everywhere.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Oh.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and for 2 hours every day, I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls. We'll be talking about the stories behind the stories in the day's news. That's the Tom Hartman Program, right here on the IE America Radio Network.
From the network that brings you different points of view from the likes of Peter Werby and Mike Malloy, now a different point of view on the news. IE America is proud to present WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. WINS is a unique news service that focuses on issues that affect our daily lives. WINS is not about what big business wants you to hear. WINS is about us. To hear WINS, go to IEAmericaRadio.com and click on WINS. If you like what you hear, call your local radio station and say you want WINS. It's something different. It's from IE America and WINS.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. This is Tom Hartman. We're asking the question, is America in danger of losing democracy the way other nations have? Here's an interesting quote from Abraham Lincoln. Today's quote, this is our quote for the day, "We the people are the rightful masters of both Congress and the courts, not to overthrow the Constitution, but to overthrow the men who pervert the Constitution." Abraham Lincoln. Interesting quote. Tomorrow's show, in the first hour, we're going to have on the general counsel to the Green Party, the top Green in the United States, David Cobb, and we're going to have on a member of the Democratic Party, and we're going to be discussing whether the Greens and the Progressives should organize together to help the Democrats in the next election, or whether they should go their own way like they did in the last. In our second hour tomorrow, we're going to talk about the edge of reality. We have an immunologist who's going to be on who believes that she's found that Lyme disease is a leftover Nazi biological weapon experiment that got loose somehow. In the next hour, we're going to be talking with an expert on SARS. Right at the moment, we've got Stan from Birmingham, Alabama on the phone. And Stan, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Tom. And thank you for your great service with your program and the guest you just had on. I wanted to comment that we've been subject to a lot of historical revisionism, especially since World War II. We've been blanketed with the idea that totalitarianism cannot occur as long as big corporations control our cultural and business leadership. This is one of the biggest lies that have ever been told, because over 90% of the dictatorships in recorded history have really been based in predatory capitalism by any other name.
Absolutely.
Now, my next point is this. One of the most definitive authors who have ever come about to prove that Nazi Germany was really a capitalist economy and not a socialist economy is William Shirer, S-H-I-R-E-R. I encourage all listeners to go to your public libraries and get all publications by William Shirer, S-H-I-R-E-R, on the true nature of Nazi Germany's economy. It was capitalist. It was not socialist.
Correct.
Now, yep. Also,
Stan, we got a boogie here. It's the end of the segment, but I absolutely agree with you. And Shirer wrote "The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich," which is one of the absolute best books on that topic. I encourage our listeners to read it. And Jacob from Santa Fe, I'm sorry we're running out of time here on this segment. We'll get back to you. If you call back toward the end of the next segment, I'd be glad to take your call. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Hi,
truth seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. If you've been suffering from withdrawal because you can't find The Malloy Show, I've got the cure. Just remember this phrase, MM 9 p.m. That's right. Mike Malloy can now be heard weeknights from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time. So turn off the reruns on TV and tune in to Mike for your nightly 3-hour bedtime story. MM 9 p.m. Pleasant dreams.
From the network that brings you different points of view from the likes of Peter Werby and Mike Malloy, now a different point of view on the news. IE America is proud to present WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. WINS is a unique news service that focuses on issues that affect our daily lives. WINS is not about what big business wants you to hear. WINS is about us. To hear WINS, go to IEAmericaRadio.com and click on WINS. If you like what you hear, call your local radio station and say you want WINS. It's something different. It's from IE America and WINS.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. Despite quick progress in overthrowing the government of Iraq recently, Army Lieutenant General David McKiernan, who's commander of coalition forces on land in Iraq, says the war itself is still not over.
We're nearing the completion of combat operations. That part of the phase of this campaign, but the campaign will continue. We have not suffered the last casualty.
During a video conference earlier today, McKiernan said the soldiers are still encountering pockets of resistance, including suicide bombers, unorganized bands of roving Iraqi fighters, and paramilitaries who had come in from other countries. McKiernan also focused on transitioning to what he called a post-hostility period, including police work and helping Iraqis restore basic services, including electricity and running water. Meanwhile, on the topic of making everyday life better for the Iraqi people, the man in charge of the country's reconstruction says there's already being progress made. Retired General Jay Garner says improvements have come about after just a few days in Iraq.
I have a good feeling about this. I'm sort of a glass-half-full guy, not a glass-half-empty guy. So I think security is getting better. I think public services are getting better. And I think in very short order, you'll see a change in the attitudes and the will of the people in the South.
He also says after talks earlier with Kurdish leader Jalal Talabani, there is an agreement now. Iraq will be a democracy and represent all of its peoples. He believes the best example of a developing representative-based government is now in the north, and he thinks that it will, quote, blossom throughout the rest of Iraq. A new report out today says four American soldiers accused of stealing about $1 million in cash they found hidden in Baghdad had actually planned to come back for a whole bunch more. The New York Post reports Army investigators have found aluminum boxes with about $12 million stashed where those soldiers could then come back and retrieve them a bit later. Troops recently discovered hundreds of millions of dollars in cash in a palace area near Baghdad that had housed Iraqi Republican Guard officials as well as members of the Ba'ath Party.
What's the big news in allergy medicine this season? It's a new name in non-drowsy relief, Allivert. New Allivert starts dissolving the instant it touches your tongue, without water. So you can take Allivert inside, outside, in your car, wherever you are. Allivert is non-drowsy 24-hour relief in a quick-dissolving tablet. New Allivert. Allergy medicine you can take right when you need it. Wherever you are, Allivert, use as directed. I may be pregnant, but my period stays away. I want to
know. With First Response Early Result Pregnancy Test, used as directed, she could get results up to 4 days sooner than other leading brands. And now, results are even clearer with an easy-read result wine. I want to know now. First Response. Results 4 days sooner.
See doctor as recommended. 52% get results 4 days sooner. 86% 2 days sooner. Use as directed.
Missouri Congressman and presidential hopeful Dick Gephardt has unveiled what he's calling a major new health care reform initiative. The plan is focused on providing universal health insurance. Gephardt, who is running for the 2004 Democratic nomination, called universal health care coverage, quote, the holy grail of public policy. Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat and Premier-designate Mahmoud Abbas have finally agreed on a reform Palestinian cabinet following last-minute mediation efforts by an Egyptian envoy. The leadership dispute had recently been holding up talks on the new Middle East peace plan.
Dad, this race car game is awesome. Want to drive?
Oh, I love that game, but not with a bad headache.
You want to go home?
The moment of choice. Which will work better on your headache?
Tylenol, or Advil. Truth is, you'll feel better faster with Advil Liquid Gels. These advanced liquid-filled capsules rush relief where you need it. They're proven to work faster, stronger, better than Tylenol on tough pain.
Can we stay a little longer?
Let's try virtual reality skiing.
Yeah!
For better headache relief, advance to Advil.
The United States, North Korea, and China have all now begun talks in Beijing aimed at hopefully resolving the nuclear impasse on the Korean Peninsula between North Korea and the United States. That crisis sparked earlier this year by Pyongyang's admission it was in fact developing nuclear weapons. This is now the first time American and North Korean delegates have met since the row between the two countries erupted. More on the story now from Celia Hatton, who is in Beijing.
Heading the U.S. team is Assistant Secretary of State James Kelly, the same official who confronted the North Koreans with evidence of a secret weapons program last October. In this three-day round of talks, Kelly is expected to outline the steps that Pyongyang must take to dismantle its nuclear weapons facilities. In exchange, North Korea is seeking a non-aggression treaty from the U.S., substantial economic aid, and the lifting of sanctions. South Korea, Japan, and possibly Russia are also expected to join the talks at a later date. Celia Hatton, Beijing.
And I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Ligas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Kids fight over toys, and mom says share. Good advice for the playground and the road. When I come back, we'll talk peaceful coexistence between cars and motorcycles.
We're at the track asking drivers why they recommend Champion Platinum Power spark plugs. Here comes Matt Kenseth and his Ford. Matt, why do you trust Champion? He said Champion provides long-lasting power. Here comes Dale Earnhardt Jr. and his Chevy. Dale said Champion has the right technology. So use Champion in your car no matter what make it is. Champion, the world's favorite spark plug. What'd he say?
Get new Champion Platinum Power spark plugs at a leading auto parts store or retailer near you.
Global detente's important, but drivers of four-wheel vehicles and two-wheeled motorcycles could use some local negotiation in sharing the road. Here's a start. Cyclist, act like full-sized vehicles by claiming road space nearer centerline, encouraging drivers to pass with a wider berth. Four-wheeled vehicles, don't move to one side to see what's going on in slow traffic. Stick to the middle of your lane. This position discourages cyclists from weaving between cars. Now that's shuttle diplomacy. I'm Bobby Likas. Like us, you'll love us. Brought to you by Champion, the world's favorite spark plug.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, thank you and welcome to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. We're broadcasting from the depths of outer space on the Sirius satellite, covering North America from the Arctic Ocean to the equator. the whole shooting match. Broadcast on terrestrial radio stations from the west to the east of the United States and streaming audio on the internet from www.ieamericaradio.com and www.tomhartman.com. You'll find links to our stream, and we'll also soon have archives of the show there. Our question for this hour is, how can a democracy respond to a health crisis and keep freedom and safety intact at the same time? How do we deal with emergencies that have to do with health? You know, SARS, of course, is the one that's at the top of everybody's mind. But this is an issue that, as a democracy, we have visited many times in the past. Sometimes with disastrous results, sometimes with very good results. Sometimes with disastrous results for democracy or for public health and vice versa. I'm suggesting that we need to immediately be spending some time and money and effort to change our fundamental population, health care, and agricultural practices. That 6 billion people on the planet, is a petri dish just waiting for an infective organism. Laurie Garrett wrote an amazing book about this called The Coming Plague, and this came out about 5 years ago or so, maybe 6 or 7 years. And I read it as part of the research I was doing for another book that I wrote called The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight. And in that book, in Laurie Garrett's book, she talks about how plagues happen and how they spread and how population density is the primary key to it. So, number one, working with those countries in the world that want to have a lower population because they want to have a higher standard of living. If you have fewer people using the same number of resources, more, you know, there's more available for everybody. In fact, many suggest that the bubonic plague back, you know, the Black Death in Europe back in the 14th century led to the Renaissance, led to this flowering of European culture because there were fewer people sharing the same resource. So rather than clawing and fighting and climbing over each other to get stuff, there was this opening, this opportunity. Well, hopefully it won't take an epidemic to bring that about again. We can do that by rational population control around the world. And the key to population control, interestingly, is not just passing out birth control pills. There are folks, you know, there are the economic salvationists who are running around saying, if you want to control population, just raise everybody to the standard of living of the American middle class. Because when people hit that standard of living, then their population goes to zero. Their population growth goes to zero. And it looks like it's true. It's happened in Western Europe. It's happened in the United States. It's happened in Japan. But the reality is that that's not the case. Because there are countries around the world where, for example, in the Gulf, many of the Gulf states where people get $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year just for being a citizen from the fuel revenues that are coming in, people are still having 6, 7, 8 babies. It's just, you know, it's still run amok. It's out of control. So it's not about economics. And also, if it was, we'd be in big trouble, because if we were to raise all 6 billion people on the earth to the poverty level in the United States, to about $14,500 a year for a family of four, keep in mind, of the 6 billion people on the earth, more than half of them live on less than $2 a day. If we were to raise all 6 billion of us to $14,500 a year for a family of four, it would require four planet Earths to provide the raw materials. So this lifestyle of consumption and waste is not only not sustainable just for us, it's not sustainable for the world, and the economic solution isn't how you control population. So, you know, that's the suggestion of the World Trade Organization and the industrialists. They say, just let us loose in the third world. Let us, you know, turn those, you know, let us run our sweatshops. Let us, no, that isn't going to do it. Sorry. In fact, if you look at Mexico after NAFTA, poverty has exploded in Mexico as a result of NAFTA. It did not help Mexico. It harmed it. And not to mention the United States. The standard of living here has been harmed. So where'd all that money go? It went into the hands of a small number of very large multinational corporations. And we're seeing these billionaires and CEOs who are making hundreds of millions of dollars and all this sort of thing. The second way that people suggest we can and should control population is by passing out birth control pills to anybody who wants them. And that's, birth control is an important thing. You know, there are hundreds of families around the world who wish they had access to various types of birth control, whatever it may be, or even knowledge about things like, you know, even the rhythm method. But that knowledge or that information or that access to technology are simply not available to them. I think Planned Parenthood says there's about 700 million and families who don't have access to any way of controlling their family size. But that's not enough people to grow the kind of populations in the world that we're having right now. So that's a problem, but it's not the problem. When you look at it, what you discover is that the problem at its core is that in those cultures where women have relatively equal power with men, population stabilizes in one single generation. Whereas in those cultures where women are under the control of men, population runs out of, you know, just runs amok. And so we find that population is very much a women's rights issue, one that we need to spread more information about. But anyhow, I'm suggesting that if we were to control our worldwide population, if we were to change our healthcare practices, this mad use of antibiotics for everything, the centralized, super centralized healthcare, and that if we were to change our agricultural practices, that we would be in a much better position to deal with things like SARS or these kinds of epidemics. And how so? Well, you know, public policy public policy is, you know, it's part of the commons, our government getting together and saying, how are we going to do things in a way that are going to serve us, we the people? You know, keep in mind the, you know, yesterday's quote from John Adams, that government is instituted for the common good, for the protection, safety, prosperity, and happiness of the people, and not for the profit, honor, or private interest of anyone, of any one man, family, or class of people. So how do we do this, public policy? Well, let's just look at a couple of examples. Interesting story on the cover of today's USA Today. They talk about the problem of, well, here, I'll just, why don't Americans walk anywhere? The old answer, they're lazy. You know, we know that we have this problem with people, you know, heart disease and obesity and things. New answer, they can't. There is no sidewalk outside the front door. School is 5 miles away, and there's a 6-lane highway between home and the supermarket. Many experts on public health say the way neighborhoods are built is to blame for America's physical activity and the resulting epidemic in obesity. And they're suggesting, these public health experts that are quoted in this article, are suggesting that we should change the way we think about urban planning and the way we think about how neighborhoods are laid out, where schools are placed. Rather than putting them on the fringes of community, let's put them in the center so kids can walk to school and you know, get daily exercise from that. Let's make our stores walk accessible. I live in a town in Vermont where I actually can walk into town every day and buy whatever needs to be bought. Louise and I have sort of a no-car policy while we live here. We try to use the car as little as possible, and it really helps. But this is one example of public policy, how we can intentionally, through, you know, make decisions that will help public health. Another one is the practice of agriculture. Up until about 30 years ago, there was no problem eating raw meat in the United States. In fact, steak tartare, I think is how it's pronounced, it was considered a delicacy. You know, raw beef, basically. People would eat this stuff and you know, it was like the grand appetizer on the menu. And then this new bacteria, E. coli H157, appeared. Now, E. coli, I think it's Escherichia coli, E. coli, is a bacteria that naturally infects the gut, the lower intestine principally, of most mammals. And it's a bacteria that actually helps in the digestion of food and the extraction of nutrients from that food. So in a way, it's actually a useful thing. But because in the 60s, and then hugely in the 1970s and 1980s, farmers started routinely administering antibiotics to cows. This was the explosion of corporate agriculture, where these big corporations would come in and buy up 100 little family farms, put them all in one place, have 10,000 cattle in one great big box, and then they had these problems with infection and disease, and these, you know, would just run through these animals. And so they started routinely administering antibiotics to them, putting them into their food. And as a result of this, one of these E. coli bacteria in some gut of some cow someplace mutated and was able to withstand the antibiotics. It became antibiotic resistant, and it was the only survivor. And it had children, or whatever you call bacterial, you know, the products of mitosis. And they split, and they split, and they split, and suddenly you got all these bacteria, and this is called E. coli H157. And if you eat this bacteria, you have a very high probability of dying. I mean, this is the stuff that has infected hamburger in the United States. It wipes out the kidneys. The bacteria produces a toxin in the intestine of humans when they eat them, and that toxin wipes out the kidneys. They shut down, and you could die, and it can also produce a blood disease. And it turns out that this thing came about as the result of our agricultural practices. Now it's a real problem. It's even spread outside of animal stuff, and you find other foods that are contaminated by E. coli H157 as a result of it. And there's all these other E. coli that are no problem, but this particular one is very dangerous. So this is an example of how our agricultural practices have been very destructive. So now we get to the situation with SARS, this sudden acute respiratory syndrome, where people are just, you know, melting down and their bodies are falling apart. Very interesting. Insurance companies are starting to exclude SARS. This is from today's, what paper was this? Business Monday. I think it might be the New York Times. It's an Associated Press story. Anyhow, some insurers have begun excluding SARS virus coverage from policies written for sponsors of events such as concerts, trade shows, and conventions. And they go on to name the companies that are doing it. Very, very strange stuff. We've got, about a minute and a half or 2 minutes, I think, before this break. Ed from Dayton, Ohio is on the phone, and he wants to talk about health issues. Hey, Ed.
Hello, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing okay, despite, my fears about things like SARS. But I just wanted to mention a couple of things that kind of play off of what you had just been saying. One is that it's not only SARS, but a lot of other things that relate to the lungs, like asthma and TB, that are also on the rise.
Oh yeah.
You know, SARS is a new thing, but a lot of lung related things are on the rise, and I wonder, you know, how much of this might be related to the combination of antibiotics with chemical mutagens in the atmosphere, especially in a place like China where there isn't much environmental enforcement, even less than we have, which isn't that great. And the other thing that I wanted to say is about how the thing about walking. It's partly urban planning, but it's also that people have to work so many hours that they want to hurry everywhere when they're not working, so they feel like they have to make the most efficient use of their time, and that puts them in the car every time.
Yeah, I agree. It's a problem. Thanks for the call, and this is the Tom Hartman radio program on the IE America Radio Network. We'll be back after this break.
I spent years learning to cope with my mental health problems and just as long conquering substance addiction. But I did both, and I'm incredibly proud. But with the world and everything going on today, I get so overwhelmed. It's so tempting to turn to drugs and alcohol to help me escape. But I don't want all of my accomplishments to just go away.
If you or someone you know is abusing drugs and alcohol to cope, get information and treatment referral at 1-800-662-HELP.
Time furnished by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
It's all in the mix. Yo, this is Ed Lover.
This is Dr. Dre.
That's right, we in the mix for Twix, baby. Here's the mix.
Ed, I'm going to tell you right now, all from state to state, it's all about the mix.
You understand? That's how it's going down. Ed Lover and Dr. Dre style.
It's all in the
mix. Rolling through the streets, just doing my thing. I need the Twix to keep me in the mix and the swing. When I want to stay real good in the mix.
Come on, y'all.
What magazine was the late Senator Paul Wellstone talking about when he said, at a time of growing media concentration, this magazine is an invaluable source of news and information that corporate media would too often prefer to ignore? He was talking about In These Times, a bi-weekly magazine of news, politics, and culture. In These Times has won more Project Censored awards than any other magazine. For 27 years, In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of the labor movement, feminism, grassroots politics, and minority communities. If getting a perspective other than what's in the mainstream media is important to you, In These Times is essential reading. In the words of best-selling author Barbara Ehrenreich, to people who say they're sick and tired of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated news media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Do it now and find out what you're missing. Look for In These Times in bookstores near you or visit them on the web at www.inthesetimes.com. That's www.inthesetimes.com.
Oh, what a wicked web of deceit is weaved by corporations promoting their global brands in an era of global unrest. Take French's mustard. After the Bushites and their right-wing political henchmen began to demonize French fries, French toast, and all things French in a stunningly stupid outburst of knuckle-dragging jingoism, this maker of the common yellow mustard put out a nativist press release declaring, "The only thing French about French's mustard is the name." The corporation's press release spoke of founder Robert French's all-American dream and about the mustard's iconic connection to hot dogs at baseball games, America's national pastime. What the PR effort did not mention is that French's mustard is no longer American. It's owned by the British conglomerate Reckitt Benckiser PLC. And while French's was furiously waving the American flag here, it also was concerned that it not actually offend the French. After all, Reckitt Benckiser does more business in Europe than in the U.S., so the corporation only released its all-American boast in the U.S., taking care to keep it off the corporate website since the French might see it there. Quote, "We are not anti-French," a flustered spokeswoman rushed out to say when word of French's anti-French statement spread. She added that, "We issued the press release in response to some confusion that was going on." Oh, thanks for clearing that up for us. Meanwhile, such We're America brand names as Coca-Cola, Pepsi, and McDonald's are suddenly trying to cloak their Americanism. For example, in India, with its large Muslim population, Coke is trying to fend off angry protests against Bush's reach for empire by emphasizing its Indianness. "We are primarily Indian, employing Indians," insisted a top executive of the corporation's subsidiary there. This is Jim Hightower saying, it all reveals yet again that the true color of corporate America is not red, white, and blue, but the color of money.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
In your eyes, and I can see death, the sky hanging on me, hanging on me.
Wow, what a great song from Cat Stevens. Amazing. He produced some of the most wonderful music in the last couple of decades. Tomorrow, on the first hour, we're going to be talking with David Cobb, who's the head counsel for the Green Party USA. He's sort of the head green out there. In fact, if Nader doesn't run for president in 2004, David might be the guy that they send. And we're going to have in discussion with him a senior official of the Democratic Party, a former member of the Clinton administration. And they're going to discuss whether Greens and progressives should get together to participate with the Democrats in 2004, whether they should compete against them as they did last time. And in our second hour, we're going to be talking to an immunologist who believes that she has found the origins of Lyme disease and suggests that it is a leftover Nazi biological weapons experiment that got loose into the environment. This is going to be interesting. So Jacob is on the line. Jacob, you called during the last hour, and I'm sorry we didn't get to your call, but right. I do want to hear what you have to say. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I listened to your guest in the previous hour, and I feel that your trial to make a comparison between Nazi Germany and this country is not only revolting but also ludicrous. I mean, how can one remember this Great Depression in this country so many years ago? Nothing happened to democracy then. Why would it happen now?
Well, there are many people, particularly, for example, my father, who's a good Republican, who would suggest that we lost a lot of democracy during the 1940s as a result of the Great Depression and the rise of Roosevelt. Now, I happen to think that Roosevelt strengthened democracy in some ways, but there is a legitimate debate there about, because Roosevelt took powers as president that had not been held or handled by presidents before, and there's been this kind of steady incremental increase of the imperial presidency ever since then. I don't think that it's a ludicrous comparison. I do agree with you, though, that there are a lot of differences between the United States now and Nazi Germany back then. Many, many differences. And George Bush is not Adolf Hitler. There's so many differences. And yet there are also some troubling similarities between the way that the direction the United States is going right now, and the way that democracy was lost, both in Germany and Argentina and many other countries over the last 50 or 60 years. Would you like to have a final comment on that, Jacob?
First of all, how the comparison with the Nazi Germany thing is completely out of place. To claim that is not real. You're actually making harm to your own argument.
How so?
Because if this was Nazi Germany, you'd not be allowed to speak on the radio.
Do you think you're going to hear me on Clear Channel?
I'm sorry?
And do you think you're going to hear me on one of the big corporate providers of radio?
Did you ever invite somebody from the big corporate providers on your show? Never did.
Oh, so, I'd be pleased to have somebody on. I mean, you're speaking right now for their position, and you're welcome on the program.
I'm just a listener. But you didn't invite me on purpose, even though I represent an opposite view of what you represent.
No, I love
that. I'll never call Guantanamo a concentration camp like you did yesterday.
Uh-huh.
This is an insult to your own country.
But these are people in Guantanamo Bay who are not charged with a crime.
They are prisoners of war. Remember? This country is at a state of war with Al-Qaeda. They want to destroy you physically.
Okay, Jacob, let's take these one at a time. Number one, we have three people in the United States who are United States citizens who are being held without any specific charges. Number two, you say we're at war with Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda is not a nation. You can't go to war against something that's not a nation. You can have a police action. The original, for example, the way that Italy dealt with the terrorists that they had in the 1960s and 70s, they didn't declare war on them. Or the way that England dealt with the IRA, a much, a terrible terrorist organization in the beginning, is they dealt with it as a police action. They said, these people are international criminals. Let's mobilize Interpol. Let's mobilize all the police agencies. If we have to use the army, we'll do it. But you declare war against nations, not against organizations. Are we going to declare war against the Boy Scouts? So, Jacob, I'm hearing that we're running out of time here. So, okay. So we'll be back after the news.
And we're playing all your favorites, but right now I have a pair of free tickets to tonight's big concert for the third caller. Oh, let's go to the phone lines. They are heating up, and let's see. Hello.
Hello.
Is this Ms. Shannon Johnson?
Yes.
Oh, you sound very excited.
I am.
Well, Ms. Johnson, I have good news.
I'm the third caller.
No. I just saved a load of money on car insurance by switching to Geico. See
what you're listening to the Tom Hartman Show. The Peter Werby Show is next on IE America Radio Network.
Life can thrive in some unexpected places, including the death trap of a carnivorous plant. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. When an ant falls into a pitcher plant, it's the end of the road. The insect will drown in rainwater held inside the carnivorous plant's cup-like flower.
They have a hood over the top that has a number of downward-pointing hairs, and right on the lip in the front, they are thought to produce a nectar or some type of scent that attracts prey into the leaf. And things like ants, sometimes earthworms, grasshoppers, a number of different things will fall into the leaf, fall in the rainwater that's caught in the leaf, and drown. And in doing so, they provide nutrients.
Florida State University ecologist Tom Miller says those nutrients feed the plant, but they also benefit a whole community of organisms that live inside the pitcher plant. Miller says the plants are like little ponds full of bacteria and other microscopic organisms, as well as insect eggs and larvae.
It confuses people a little bit because there's all these dead bugs falling in this pitcher, but there's another whole set of live bugs, different species, that actually utilize these cup-shaped leaves and the water in them as their home.
Bacteria inside the pitcher produce digestive enzymes that break down trapped insects. Miller says the plant probably benefits from this action, but he says scientists aren't sure because the plants produce their own set of enzymes. And there's a whole food chain in this little ecosystem. Minute animals such as rotifers, which can only be seen under a microscope, feed on the bacteria. Mosquito larvae eat the rotifers. Miller has studied the purple pitcher plant at 40 locations across the United States and Canada. So far, he's discovered that the same types of mosquitoes, flies, and other creatures live in the plants from Florida all the way to northern Canada. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Peter Werby Show is now airing at a new time. Hi, it's Julene Jordan. The IE America Radio Network has added many exciting new shows to the lineup, and in doing so, the Peter Werby Show has a new time slot. It's weekdays, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we share with you progressive views about peace and social justice that you won't find in the corporate and conservative media. Join us 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern on the IE America Radio Network. For more information, go to www.ieamericaradio.com.
Hi, I'm Steven Sack, and I host the Employees Lawyer Show on IE America Radio Network. We take calls from people all over the United States, and we help them in their job problems. So if you ever wondered what job rights you have and how to fight back, I'm the guy to call.
Listen to Steven at his new time on Sundays from 9 a.m. until noon and rebroadcast from 9 p.m. till midnight.
For more information on my show or other shows on the IE America Radio Network, go to IEAmericaRadio.com. It's the best advice I can give.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, well, Okay, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking about SARS here and how can democracy respond to a health crisis and keep freedom and safety intact? We had an interesting caller, Ed from Dayton, Ohio, a few minutes ago, talking about the spread of pulmonary diseases, lung diseases all over. I was in India last year. Actually, I guess it was 2 years ago now, the last time I was there. I've been there many times. And as I was flying into the country, I was reading the in-flight magazine. This is on Indian Air India, or Indian Airlines. And I was reading the in-flight magazine, and there was an article about how the Indian government was like kind of coming clean about the fact that over 300 million people in India have tuberculosis. That's more than a third of the population. And now only 1 in 10 of those people are have active cases of it. But it was really spooky. I remember standing in the airport. And there was one guy, this was in the Hyderabad airport, and there was one guy who was standing over by a wastebasket just coughing his lungs up and spitting this stuff in the wastebasket. And it was like there was this circle that had formed around him, or an empty area. You know, people were just moving away. It's like they just knew, you know, this guy is sick, don't go near him. And yet, you know, he got on the airplane. I got back and got checked, and I didn't pick it up. But tuberculosis is the most rapidly spreading disease, deadly disease on the planet right now. With every tick of the second hand of the clock, a person dies from TB somewhere in the world. It is a major, major problem. And the World Health Organization has declared New York and Los Angeles as TB hotspots because there are so many cases in those places, although most of it is confined to third world countries. So we have these very, very interesting and concerning problems about SARS and about this whole issue of what is this? What's going on with this? Turns out our guest that we were going to have on is not available right now. So I'm just going to share some information with you that we've been able to gather in preparation for this show. So one thing that was particularly interesting, I have some sort of statistics, well, some scientists, here's a note, this is from globalchange.com. Scientists have the technology to produce viruses like SARS. I remember when SARS first emerged. This was, you know, just what, a few weeks ago, a month or so ago. And I remember wondering out loud, could it be that what this thing is a weapons program run amok? You know, is it possible that something got out of the lab? And it turns out that it's a coronavirus, which is the family of viruses that the common cold shares with. And colds sweep across the world regularly, and typically people will get several different viruses during the course of the year, and many times don't even know it. They just have a day where they kind of feel off, or they feel a little wheezy or woozy, or their stomach is upset or whatever. And it's just like, you know, these viruses just get handed off and boom all around the world. Our immune systems deal with them well. But the coronaviruses are particularly pernicious, because they are capable of surviving oxygen. Oxygen is or at least for a period of time, oxygen is a toxin for most biological organisms, and particularly the simple ones. And viruses are typically considered anaerobic. They're typically considered something that doesn't survive well in an environment with oxygen. And so, for example, the AIDS virus, if you get, you know, you get somebody with AIDS and they spill their blood on the ground and that blood gets exposed to oxygen, it kills the virus. Bang, it's gone. But with the coronaviruses, like the common cold and SARS, the common cold typically can survive about 4 hours, is conventional wisdom as far as I've been able to determine it. There was an article in today's, I believe it was the New York Times, about how they are speculating. Now, nobody knows because they're still figuring this stuff out, but they're speculating that the SARS virus can probably last 24 hours, which is a very, very, very long-lived virus. That means that Well, you can extrapolate. You know, if somebody uses a pen to sign a credit card and then leaves it behind, and you come along and use the same pen, if somebody touches a doorknob, I mean, it's the kind of thing that makes people with obsessive compulsive disorder go nuts, and perhaps rightly so. It's you see this dramatic concern spreading all over the place, and the SARS virus is one of a large number of totally new agents emerging every year. Every year there are new viruses. Every single year. And they're spreading in large part because of, as I mentioned earlier, our agricultural practices. But I want to give you another look at that. We're seeing a lot of viruses that are jumping from species to species. This is a real significant problem. And the flu, for example, avian flu, comes from birds. And there's also a form of flu that comes from pigs. And the reason why so many of these things come from China, the Hong Kong flu, is because there's such a dense concentration of these animals in those areas. We have Paul on the line from, I can't quite see it, the BC, warning about SARS. Paul, would you like to come on the phone here with us?
Hello, Tom. I just got one sentence. Through the BBC News website, the World Health Organization is advising people not to travel to Toronto.
Yeah, I heard that this morning. Toronto's having a real problem. This brings up the question, you know, which is the question for the hour here on the Tom Hartman program, which is how can a democracy respond to a health crisis and keep freedom and safety intact? What do you think, Paul? How do we deal with the balance between the need to hold people in quarantine and the need to ensure individual freedoms? Very quickly, because our guest just got on the line here.
Yes, okay. The thing is that the healthcare system in our country is based on how much money you have.
In the United States.
On your need, it's how much money you have.
Right. And so we need a system that is really directed more at the health concerns of people rather than their ability to pay, I guess you're suggesting. Paul, thank you very much for calling from Detroit. We have Dr. Dixon on the line from the United Kingdom. Dr. Dixon, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hello.
Hello. When we had some trouble reaching you, and I had set aside the note I had with your bio. If you want to just give us a quick introduction of your position, and let's talk about SARS for a minute.
Okay. Well, thanks very much. I'm speaking from the perspective of a physician and someone who's been tracking HIV and AIDS for the last 15 years. In fact, I've set up a non-profit trying to contain the AIDS epidemic in countries like India and Africa for the last 15 years. I'm also involved in advising boards and senior teams as a futurist. That's an analyst of global trends. And I've been tracking the SARS epidemic for some time. In fact, I predicted it over 15 years ago, that we would see mutant viruses that spread much more rapidly than HIV and pose very serious health threats. And SARS, of course, has some similarities and differences. It is much more infectious than HIV. HIV takes, on average, 24 months for one person to infect another, whereas with SARS, as we've seen, the doubling time is about 14 days. So I'm sorry.
Dr. Dixon, how do we extrapolate doubling time? If we have a doubling time of 14 days and we have 2,000 cases right now, what does that mean we're going to see as the year goes on?
Well, we can't very easily just automatically predict what's going to happen in the future just from the past. But doubling time of 14 days, you can do the maths yourself. What it means is that, in a way, you could say it means the epidemic spreads slowly. It means, on average, the average person with SARS only infects one other person in a couple of weeks, which means that many people don't infect anybody else at all. One or two may infect 10 other people or something like that. But on average, one person only infects one other in every 2 weeks. Now, that sounds fine worldwide until you start doing the math. And then you begin to realize that actually, if you go through 10 doublings, which takes 20 weeks, you go from one case to 1,000. It means that in 4 weeks worldwide, you go from 1,000 cases to 4,000 cases, which is what we've just seen. The biggest concern I have is not actually what's happening in Canada. Canada is well-resourced. Toronto is taking a magnificent response to this illness, and I have no doubt that the current outbreaks will become under control. The big concern is that countries like Uganda or Zimbabwe or Zaire or India, rural parts of China, they do not have the kind of healthcare systems that you have in Toronto. They don't have the muscle to be able to do all this contact tracing and the isolation and all the rest of it. And I believe that there's a significant risk. I'm putting it 25%. A 25% risk that we will see a very significant rapid spread in some of the poorest nations amongst the 4 billion people in the world who only have $2 a day to live on. And amongst those communities, if it takes hold, we will then see, I have no doubt, in that case, we would then see as a secondary issue a global pandemic. Now, we've seen this before. In 1918, we saw a mutation in the flu virus, which ripped its way around the world, infecting 500 million people in just 18 months and killing 30 million. So, you know, this is nothing new. We've seen this before. But remember that in 1918, that was the age of the horse and cart. It was the age of the steam engine. Now we're in the age of air travel. So it's hard for people to imagine what would have happened if the 1918 outbreak had happened today.
Dr. Dixon,
I'm deeply concerned about it, and I feel that that we actually need to see this as an issue of national security. We should take this illness out of the jurisdiction of health authorities and health ministers. It should be heads of state that are dealing with it. We should be seeing a multidimensional response, wealthy nations helping the poorest nations, or we'll see a whole lot more Toronto-style outbreaks.
So we need a Manhattan-style, a Manhattan Project-style super concentration.
We need to see exactly the same level of response internationally as we saw over the Iraq War, with debates and summits and conferencing happening at the very highest levels between heads of state, trying to work out how we're going to have a global strategy to contain this illness, bearing in mind that unless the wealthy states take action, it is no pointless for Toronto, quite frankly, to have all kinds of measures to contain the thing if we don't take similar measures in the poorest nations. And that means they're going to need serious help.
And that's going to cost a fortune. Dr. Dixon, I read on CNN's website a couple of days ago that almost no children have gotten SARS, that this seems to be a disease that only kills adults. Do you know about that?
Now that's true. We know that this virus is unstable. It's, after all, just undergone a major mutation since November. It may undergo further mutations. There's a possibility that it is now more virulent than it was 5 months ago, with actually affecting young children and younger adults, as well as the elderly and chronic sick. We don't know that yet for sure, but World Health Organization now say they believe that the death toll will turn out to be about 5%, up from 4%.
Wow. And it won't. Now, my recollection of the Spanish flu, and I read a history of this several years ago, but it's been, you know, it's kind of the fog of my memory now, was that over time that flu just petered out because the most virulent strains of it killed off their carriers so quickly, and the less virulent strains of it traveled, you know, more rapidly because people were sicker longer and they infected more people, but they didn't die. And as a consequence, people developed an immunity to both the most virulent and the least virulent strains, and that seems to be the way that viral epidemics are self-limiting. Is that an accurate description?
Well, all viral epidemics tend to be self-limiting eventually because those of who have natural resistance don't get it. Those that succumb and recover and with antibiotics, or they they die. Spanish flu came and went. It just disappeared. It mutated again to a less virulent form. I hope and pray that happens with SARS. I hope and pray it happens in the next day or two. I hope it happens in the next week or next month. We have to assume that it won't. We have to assume that SARS could be around for a long time. If that's the case, then we need to take public health measures now, as I say, at the most senior levels, and look to do all we possibly can to contain it on a global basis. As I say, a Canadian strategy against SARS is doomed to fail. A strategy against SARS has to embrace what's happening, what could happen in Uganda, in India, and other parts of the world.
Right, or an American strategy similarly that we here in the United States also have to address this directly.
I'm going to have to go now because I'm actually in a TV studio here in London. It's great to talk to you people.
Dr. Dixon...
Your listeners where they can find a resource that might help.
I was just going to ask you to say that. Please tell us, tell our listeners where they can find it.
On my website, globalchange.com, sars.htm/sars.htm. The globalchange.com site has a page which I'm struggling to keep up to date. I'm trying to update it on a daily basis. It's one of the most heavily used pages on the internet on this subject.
Yeah, we found it, and I printed it out.
Great to talk to you. Extraordinary details.
Thank you, Dr.
This
Dixon.
This is not a time for panic. This is not a time for panic. It's a time for, of course,
for national action. Thank you very much for being on the line with us. Dr. Dixon calling from the United Kingdom, from England. And he points out that this is a very real problem that we ignore at our peril. To think, oh well, you know, the news of the day is just about the war, the news of the day is just about this or that. And yet, at the same time, we have this larger question, or perhaps the question that will last longer than SARS, hopefully, assuming that SARS goes the course in a worst case scenario of the Spanish flu, the flu of 1918. That is, that it ends up going away, that how can a democracy respond to a health crisis and keep freedom intact, keep our safety intact and freedom at the same time? Is our government expecting something like SARS in the form of smallpox? This is a fascinating question. And, you know, you wonder about this. What's going on with these smallpox vaccinations in today's USA Today? Federal health officials, undaunted by a weak response to the first phase of the smallpox preparedness program, are pressing forward with phase two, vaccinating 10 million emergency first responders. Now, what's going on with this? What do they know that we don't? Or is this just part of the whip up the hysteria thing? Or is there a very real concern here? How do we take this right across the world as a way of making sure that the planet is safe as well as us? Because we can't separate ourselves from it. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network.
This is Dr. Danny. Paul, you're on the air.
Hey, Dr. Danny.
Hey.
Man, listen, we're having a hard time potty training our son.
Well, that's a common problem. How old is your boy?
He's 26.
Paul, I have some bad news. At this age, potty training will be near impossible.
You kidding me?
No, but Paul, I do have some good news.
All right, man. What?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
You're strapped into 700 horses of pure power.
Gentlemen, start your engine.
But you're twitching from the itching, squirming from the burning, and you've got 500 laps to go.
I should have used Preparation H.
Cool it fast with Preparation H cooling gel. Cools on contact for fast relief.
Lap number 25.
Oh, man, I should have used Preparation H.
Preparation H cooling gel. Cools on contact. Uses directed.
When we bought this house, I really loved all the open space nearby.
Me too.
Too bad our real estate agent never mentioned what they had planned for that space.
Four!
Yeah, too bad. Want to find the right real estate agent for you? Come to LendingTree.com. We'll personally match you with a LendingTree certified real estate agent, provide access to home listings, even a $1,000 gift card. Call 1-800-555-TREE or click on LendingTree.com. Equal housing opportunity. Some restrictions may apply. See website for details.
Whether it's fair or not, people judge you by the words you use. In business and socially, your vocabulary and language skills tell everyone about your background, education, even your intelligence. That's why you need Verbal Advantage. While you listen, Verbal Advantage will give you the confidence that comes with a strong command of the English language. No more fumbling for the right word. No more embarrassment at how to express yourself. No more fear of using the wrong word. And it's so easy. To learn, you simply listen. When you want. Where you want. See why over 100,000 people have already gotten the verbal advantage they need for success.
To learn more about verbal advantage, call now. 1-800-444-1984. That's 444-1984. 1-800-444-1984.
Tia Carrera
is on the front in Playboy. I think what you have done is give a little more license to people who have a few more years on them.
Probably. A few more years on them.
Well,
a few more years on them.
No. I'm talking about now.
Like the tread on a tire.
Yeah, never mind. I can't make it better.
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this.
On the IE America Radio Network.
At Animal Talk, we think deep thoughts. We think about things that most people don't think about, such as, do dogfish chase catfish? Do jellyfish taste good with peanut butter? These are things that bother us. Why is it that Donald Duck doesn't wear any pants, but when he comes out of the shower, he wraps a towel around his waist?
Dude, you need a hobby.
Oh.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and for 2 hours every day, I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls. We'll be talking about the stories behind the stories in the day's news. That's the Tom Hartman Program, right here on the IE America Radio Network.
From the network that brings you different points of view from the likes of Peter Werby and Mike Malloy, now a different point of view on the news. IE America is proud to present WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. WINS is a unique news service that focuses on issues that affect our daily lives. WINS is not about what big business wants you to hear. WINS is about us. To hear WINS, go to IEAmericaRadio.com and click on WINS. If you like what you hear, call your local radio station and say you want WINS. It's something different. It's from IE America and WINS.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Freedom. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network and on the Sirius Satellite Channel 145, Sirius Left. And we have Billy in Santa Cruz on the line. Billy, did I get the bumper music wrong? Billy? Hello?
Hello, Tom.
Yeah.
There you go. Yes, Tom, the bumper music. I was enjoying the show when something glaringly uncomfortable happened, and that is you played Cat Stevens.
Okay, what's wrong with that?
Well, you know, when one author, Cat Stevens, publicly agrees with a hit contract, a murder wish, I don't know how good your memory is, but you remember the fatwa against Rushdie?
Oh, yeah, I do.
Yeah. So just let's fill
Cat
in.
Cat Stevens endorsed that?
Excuse me?
Are you saying Cat Stevens endorsed that?
Yes. As Yusuf... whatever his name is.
Yeah,
Abraham,
I didn't know
whatever.
That.
You know, he became a Muslim, and when he became a Muslim, he became a guy to whom murder was okay just because someone supposedly insulted somebody's religion.
Well, and he said that.
When the Ayatollah put the hit out on Rushdie, came out and said, yeah, let's kill him.
Incredible.
Not in so many words, but that's, in fact, correct. If I'm wrong, fine. But if I'm right, I really think that that's unforgivable, and we shouldn't be hearing Cat Stevens' music. As much as I love, you know, Looking for a Hard-Headed Woman, which I guess if you're Islam is important. You're going to beat
them okay, Billy. Good point. I must, you know, I spent a lot of time outside the country, and I must have just been, you know, someplace in some
country. Well, if you were in England, had you been in England, you would have run into Rushdie hiding.
I knew about the Rushdie thing, but I didn't know about Cat Stevens saying that. I'm surprised. Anyway, you didn't call specifically about that. You wanted to talk about the SARS stuff?
Well, actually, I did talk about that, but as far as the SARS thing is concerned, the thing, of course, that troubles me is that, and it's the thing we have problems with all over the place, and that is public officials tend to be liars and tend to be the master of cover-up. And when you can't trust the public officials, and we can't certainly trust ours, or, for that matter, the mayor of Beijing or anywhere else, we might be in a lot of trouble.
Yeah. Well, I agree broadly. I think that there are still some public officials who have a lot of integrity. Our elected officials here in Vermont, Bernie Sanders in particular, I have great respect for. I think that there's a lot of good people out there. We just have to fix the system so that they can emerge. Thanks, Billy. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. Next up is Peter Werbe. Great entertainment for the next 3 hours. Have a great day.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.